So the sun finally came out today. That's the good news. Hello and welcome to Your Politics, the RTE Politics team's weekly Leinster House podcast. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, Fiacra O'Kiona, Sandra Hurley and Paul Cunningham. A bit of sunshine today for all of us who've been living on the gloomy East Coast. That may be good news. But today is also, it marks 1 month since Donald Trump came to power. And it's been absolutely mad, Ted. He's been blaming Ukraine.
Is that a scientific term?
Well, there you go. He's blamed Ukraine for Russia's invasion.
Yeah.
He's called Zelensky, not Putin, a dictator. He's ripping up transatlantic partnerships on defence and trade. Mm-hmm. His team are openly backing far-right groups left, right and centre. So I suppose old certainties no longer apply for the EU and for Ireland. So talk to us about these shifting sands this past month.
I think if you think about it, what Donald Trump has done is not a surprise. We knew that he was going to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. We knew that he doesn't believe in multilateralism, so his relationship with the EU was going to change. We also knew that he has sort of had an eye in the European Union with regard to all sorts of trade imbalances, so that was going to mean tariffs. He'd been promising us during the general election campaign. And then with Ukraine, the suspicion always was that he was going to side with Russia, and not necessarily because Ukraine was important. It was this idea of sort of like a bi- or tripolar world in which Donald Trump and mm-hmm. Putin and the president in China would be dividing up areas of zones of control. So once again, I think the surprise maybe is this, Áine, is the speed with which it's happening, that there's far more efficiency than the first Trump where there was disorder and people were coming and going. At this point, they're just rattling through it. They're doing it really, really quickly. And from Ireland's perspective, we do have this big opportunity. We usually looked at it in the context of St. Patrick's Day, but at the same time, if you look out into the Atlantic, there's a wave coming at us, and we just don't know how tall that wave is going to be in the context of trades and tariffs and what it could mean for this country.
And Trump 2.0 is definitely different. You know, we've had seen all these European leaders scrambling after Munich when J.D. Vance came out and scolded European values and scolded NATO and, you know, generally poured cold water over pretty much everything the European project is about. So there have been lots of emergency meetings and conferences. Within that, of course, a divided European response. And within that, Ireland sitting on the edge of the table.
Yes, Ireland notably not invited to that big meeting organised by President Emmanuel Macron at the beginning of the week. Micheál Martin did take part in a sort of second tier mm-hmm. event, online video conferencing, where we believe we're told he made these comments talking about Ireland could participate in a peacekeeping force in Ukraine if one is required in the future. But yes, Ireland not fully at the table. Of course, Ireland is militarily neutral, but it hasn't been politically neutral on Ukraine. But it certainly puts all the focus back on Ireland's defence spending. We've heard from several government ministers this week about the need to up the level of defence spending. A lot of focus too on those subsea cables. So much internet traffic going through those. They are clearly a valuable resource and they pass through or very near Irish waters. And then we're back looking at the triple lock. The direction of travel, I think, was clear from the last government. They do want to reform it. They want to remove that UN Security Council blockage. There was a commitment to do that. I think the euphemism was they were going to reform mm-hmm. it in the programme for government. But we are going to get it in this defence bill, which is on the list of priority bills. The question is how they make the arguments around that, because I think the opposition and some of the wider discussion, they will see any relaxation of the triple lock as a dilution of Ireland's neutrality. And the government has been making the argument that it's not going to do that, but it is a difficult argument to make on something that people seem to cherish, even if it is a nebulous concept.
And the proposal was quite simply because the Security Council mm-hmm. can't agree on anything anymore because of the Russian and Chinese veto, so it can't send any peacekeeping force anywhere or mandate one, that instead of relying on the Security Council being the third leg mm-hmm. of the triple lock, Ireland would go with a vote of the General Assembly, where mm-hmm. you get a much wider reflection, if you like, of global opinion.
Or a regional body. So that regional thing could be an EU view or the African Union or something like that.
You can understand why a lot of the opposition, though, Fiacra, will see what's been going on, will see things like going to Munich, being part of the G20 as a slippery slope.
I think that's exactly how certainly some of the left-leaning elements of the opposition see it. Indeed, Solidarity People Before Profit were out on the plinth in the Dáil on Tuesday saying exactly that, saying that, look, Richard Boy Barrett saying that, look, any movement on the triple lock is, in his view, a dilution of the neutrality of Ireland, the military neutrality of Ireland. Now, of course, governments say it a different way, saying, look, we're in a new world than we were even this time last year, certainly 10 years ago, certainly a few decades ago. We're in a new scenario now. Exactly as you were saying, that, you know, because the Security Council in the UN can't agree on anything now, that in effect, if we leave it as is, that China and Russia could be deciding what Ireland does, because you would need China and Russia's backing or abstaining at least to allow us to have involvement in military exercises. Government is being very clear, though, in being keen to say at the moment that, look, it's not really moving into military, it's moving into kind of peacekeeping elements in certain scenarios. So if there was a peace deal, for example, in Ukraine, that perhaps Irish troops could be part of any UN peacekeeping force. But certainly from the opposition, they certainly see it as you said, a slippery slope to a new world for Ireland and possibly questions over Ireland's neutrality.
Which does make me wonder, like at a strategic level, we know that there's a recognition now that when it comes to, say, for example, in the Dáil this week, we were hearing about a Security and Defence Oireachtas Committee because there's a new priority there. We know that there's a National Security Council, the Defence Forces and Gardaí who briefed the Taoiseach on all of these matters of security. And there's a possibility now we're going to have a ministerial council, a wider group, which is going to be feeding in. We know that when it comes to cyber and hybrid risks, this is the new world. We need to get on it. And we also know that we don't have basic things. We don't have a heavy lift airplane to get our troops to and from Lebanon or anywhere else. We don't have radar, primary radar. So there's an awful lot of stuff that the government could do within that, also boosting numbers.
And we can't put a naval vessel, more than one naval vessel to sea at the moment with weapons capacity because of a shortage of qualified staff.
So it would seem that there's far more work that could be achieved successfully without having to tip into a debate on whether or not the triple lock is endangering unity or not. And I just wonder if, while, as Sandra correctly said, that defence bill is given a priority, somewhere in government they might just say, listen, we've got an awful lot to sort out here in Ireland. Let's not get caught up in that, looking beyond that immense amount of work and whether or not we're going to up, going from instead of option two when it comes to our defence forces, going to option three, increasing the spending to get our own house in order.
All of which means that the St. Patrick's Day White House ceremonials, if they do go ahead, and it looks increasingly as if they will, the expectation we were hearing from Sean Whelan in Washington is that it'll be the week before St. Patrick's Day, which I think falls on a Monday this year. But given the way that, again, Donald Trump has just been rewriting all the norms, you'd imagine in foreign affairs that they're gaming out lots of different scenarios that could go well, or it could be a pretty bruising experience, couldn't it, Sandra?
Yeah, I think you simply could not predict what President Trump could come out with in that joint press call with Micheál Martin. And Micheál Martin is an experienced politician, and that experience will be tested during that meeting, because Trump could say anything in relation to tariffs, and in particular in relation to Ireland's tax model. We know that his main economic advisor, Howard Lutnick, has Ireland within his sights, and Trump has mentioned this as well. He talks about Apple tax as well. So
Pharma, he was at Pharma again this week promising a 25% tariff.
And no matter how many times Irish government ministers come out and point out that the surplus, the trade surplus, does not exist on the services side, Trump is fixated on the goods surplus and particularly the pharmaceuticals, billions of them exported from Ireland to the US every year. So it is going to be a difficult meeting. And Micheál Martin is really going to have to prepare well for that one. At the same time, though, I think he must be kind of relishing it, because he missed out several times in recent years through some sort of bad luck. And it would be better to have the meeting and be at the table. That is the view of the Irish government, than to not go at all.
It'll be interesting to see as well, won't it, how the Taoiseach handles himself in New York, given the controversy surrounding Mayor Eric Adams and the prosecution that was dropped. And
yeah, I mean, what we did learn about Donald Trump, as if we didn't know it already, is that when President Zelensky of Ukraine decided to critique him and say and live in this ecosystem of disinformation, the attack was immediate and it was sustained. So if Simon Harris sees a microphone put under his nose, he might well be advised to say as little as possible. And how that stands with the principal position, which sometimes Irish politicians see themselves, that might be a little bit difficult. But he is going over there as a guest. I think he's going to have to box clever. We talked in the last podcast about how Enda Kenny was able to say something to Donald Trump without it necessarily
causing...
That's
St. Patrick being an immigrant.
Exactly,
yes.
Without it causing difficulty. So, like, this is top drawer stuff required.
All right, so we'll see how all that fancy footwork develops. What we're still waiting to see is the nature of the compromise that could emerge on the speaking rights row, Fiacra. Submissions came in yesterday, was that right?
Yeah, so submissions, the deadline for submissions over this round has been bubbling away for the past couple of weeks in the Dáil, and obviously getting a lot of attention. They came in last week. Most parties, pretty much all parties, are exactly where they were on this issue, and it is likely to come up again next week, next Tuesday, next Wednesday. Again, the Dáil, you can already see the Social Democrats and other parties already raising concerns, saying that, look, they don't want to see the government's position push through on this issue.
The government has already agreed, because the original compromise, of course, that got the Taoiseach elected was that the government would agree with the opposition on a way forward, wasn't that the wording?
That was the wording, but the wording seems to be open to debate. There might have been a little bit of Brega going on to a degree on those issues. But one of the things to watch out for, though, in practical terms, is that until the speaking rights issue is completely resolved, we can't have the formation of Dáil committees. And obviously, that's where, you know, a lot of the juicy side of maybe politics here in Leinster House comes from.
It's also where the hard work gets done, isn't it? It's also where, for instance, you'd have the work going on as to what happened with the Arts Council and all that excess spending. That's one of the issues a Public Accounts Committee would be looking at.
And that's why I think that if agreement can't be reached, the government will say, well, we did try. But after that, then they're going to have to push it to a vote. They will see it as. So we know that there's due to be another meeting on this issue between the parties on Wednesday of next week. That committee right there and then could decide we're not making any progress, we're going to call a vote, and that vote will be won because the government is majority. It could therefore go to the Dáil on the Thursday. All hell may break loose. But I just get the sense that there's a... that the government feels it's made as many offers as it can. It doesn't feel as if there's going to be a compromise, and it's edging towards that point where we can't delay this any longer for the very reason you said. Important work of the AUKUS has to happen, and that is getting committees up and running.
And getting the committees up and running, it would lively up the place quite a lot, wouldn't it, Sandra? Because in the absence of committees, we've been having debates on motions, and one of the questions arising out of, I think, two opposition housing motions. Where is James Brown? Where is the housing minister?
Yeah, he has been doing media interviews and he has been speaking in the Dáil, but certainly some others within government, some would say Micheál Martin, has been doing a lot of the running on some of the big ideas here. He's clearly...
In fairness, I should add, James Brown had a cabinet meeting, I think, during the first debate, and he made 10 minutes at the end of the second debate. Yeah.
Yes.
But it was raised by the opposition that he should have been there. So, like, it is a point of contention.
Yeah, and they are annoyed that he hasn't been there all the time to answer all the questions. Sometimes the junior ministers have been there. Certainly... there is a sense that the government isn't fully up and running yet. It is quiet in the Dáil. As you said, there's lots of statements about statements, kind of dull debates because the legislation hasn't come through yet. Some ministers also are clearly taking a bit of time to get on top of their briefs. I think some are more out there in the media and more comfortable putting forward their policy platforms and making it clear what they're going to do. The Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, has clearly moved into the brief pretty smoothly. He had been a spokesperson in justice before and he has been pushing forward his ideas, whereas other ministers, I think, have been a bit slower to do that. They are definitely taking their time.
The opposition view on that whole issue, though, on the housing issue and the two housing motions and debates, it is quite compelling if you look at the overview of it, that, okay, James Brown, for the first motion, there was a cabinet meeting taking place, but for the second motion this week, there wasn't. As you said, he came in for the last couple of minutes. It was pointed out by opposition parties, and I believe some journalists were also pointing out that Stour O'Brien, the former housing minister, was there for part of it and looking rather more relaxed than perhaps he has in the past in housing.
And what we have had this week is the idea of garden sheds for housing, not for renting, although how you would define that would be difficult. There was also an interesting disagreement over a possible return to tax breaks for developers. And there really does seem to be, and rent pressure zones, and there really does seem to be a bit of a dividing line, doesn't there, emerging between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on this one. And of course, Fine Gael holding the Department of Finance.
I'm not sure just exactly how wide it is, because we had the Taoiseach Micheál Martin saying everything has to be on the table because this is our number one priority, delivering homes, and on that basis we have to consider everything. And he suggested, you know, we may have to look at the question of tax. What Pascal Donoghue ruled out emphatically was return to Section 23 and tax breaks for developers of the Celtic Tiger year. But Micheál Martin hadn't suggested that that was what he was looking for. Mm-hmm. And in some of the clarification that came out afterwards, we were beginning to hear that maybe it might be specific areas like brownfield sites which would be designated, and maybe those tax breaks would be finite. So it isn't beyond the bounds of possibility that some compromise will be found. But because it's tax, it relates to the budget. So we're not going to know until October.
And of course, we had the former head of the Housing Commission saying, you know, even in terms of moving to the rent reference zones instead of rent pressure zones, which they had recommended, you would need to phase it in over a period of at least 2 years, because otherwise there's the risk of upsetting the housing market. But, Sandra, here's the thing. The target last year, well, it wasn't the target. The target was 33. The government talked up 40,000, didn't deliver it, made less at 30,000, just over 30,000 than the year before. Prediction for this year from the home builders themselves, 32,000. That's all. We had Davies last week telling us we need three times that.
Yeah, the scaling up is proving really difficult. And there's no question there's a political imperative for the government to come forward with new policies. They are working on some sort of review of the Housing for All policy.
Is there
and
a sense
floating all these
Martin
new ideas.
Gets that, even if they don't quite have the plan defined yet?
Yes, definitely. I think those figures, the house completions falling to 30,000 was a stark reminder that they needed to do something different. You can't just keep saying that the plan is working. It clearly isn't working. They need to try new things. And I think a lot of ministers have been coming out and saying, we just need to put everything on the table. Everything needs to be tried. I think when you look at the Home Builders Association figures from this morning, they do, of course, represent the builders. There is a big lobby on for some sort of subsidy or tax breaks or some help from the building sector, from developers. It's a tough sell. Some of the government seem to be more on board than others, as Paul was saying, although maybe it's a bit more nuanced than that. But the builders are certainly saying, we need help. We need you to bridge this viability gap. Otherwise, you're not going to get these big apartment complexes started in Dublin. But politically, it's such a tough sell.
And what's been interesting, again, the questions that are being asked, if you like, of institutional government, particularly finance and deeper. For instance, when Irish Water was given the substantial bailout, what was it, around £1 billion? But I think, I can't remember the number exactly, but an awful lot of that went not into laying pipes, but it went into paying down debt. So this balance between prudence and going all out in fixing a problem that's having an enormous social impact at the moment.
There are things that are within the government's control. And it was noticeable that when Micheál Martin came out after the first cabinet committee on housing, he was speaking about serviced land, you know. So there was land that was zoned that isn't serviced. So, and if you don't have your water and sewage and everything else, you're not able to do it. In the home builders account today, what are they talking about? Not enough land which has been zoned and serviced.
And an issue with local authorities, housing plans, because very often they'll have set a limit on the amount of housing development they'll want in a particular area. Again, that's something government is saying they're going to be looking
at. Or housing bodies that haven't been fully funded. So there was a David Murphy, our economics correspondent, was talking to a builder who said there's 2,500 homes on the next unit. We want to do it. The money isn't there. We don't know when it's going to be there. And so we're waiting, and we've got, you know, precast concrete ready to roll. It's just sitting up in Cavan in a store. So those are things that can be done. And it'll be fascinating to see after the Planning and Development Bill, you know, all million pages of it went through the Oireachtas and the dog days of the last government, just exactly what happens there, because one of the other problems we've had is legal challenges. And we know that within that bill, it's got certain provisions. And the second it's enacted, someone's going to walk down to the courts and everything stops again.
And the other thing I'm going to find very interesting, because an awful lot of store has been put in this this planning legislation, Fiacra, but what's interesting is, you know, you think of some of the very big developments, particularly in Dublin, where the need is so enormous at the moment, in Dundrum, on the north side around St Anne's, in Clonliffe, you know, lots of objections and lots of politicians right across the board backing those objections, because that's what your voters want. But if we're serious about tackling this housing crisis, you know, it's not just changing the legislation. Don't we need the politicians to say build, baby, build?
Well, to a degree we do.
But not a dictatorship on you.
I sound Trumpian.
It did.
There is always that contradiction for many politicians, that it's, you know, the national issue, what the national need is, and they're happy to talk about that. But then, you know, it's the NIMBYism issue, really. It's you know, not in my backyard. You know, and that is a big problem for lots of politicians, that the local need might be different to the national need, and what demographic do they want to play to is the big issue for them. Now, you're seeing a degree of this coming up, and it's likely to come up in a slightly different way in terms of the cabin-style units to potentially be allowed to be built out people's back gardens, or the opposition have described them possibly as sheds and asking people to live in, you know, glorified sheds. That is.
Although there was a bike shed that was very glamorous, wasn't there?
Yeah, I don't know if people wanted to live in that either, but it's that is going to be an interesting development on how it goes forward, because while on a national level that would help to address the shortage of houses, at a local level that's going to lead potentially to problems with maybe the neighbour next door saying, well, hang on, you can see into my house, maybe there's lights on all the time, maybe there's parties going on. What happens after, you know, maybe after 10 years after these are built, and maybe the family member is no longer living there, do you get to rent it out? Can you sell it on? Do planning complaints then come up at that point?
My head's hurting already. Let's talk about the presidential election. Linda Martin, Sandra.
Yes, she says that she's been approached by a political party. Now, no journalist has been able to find which political party this might be. She's a bit of a left-field candidate. She is known for her love of animals and all of that. But
and we had Dana, of course, was a serious candidate.
Yes, and I believe Linda Martin has said that she is very good friends with Dana, and maybe they have discussed it. So nobody's been able to flesh that one out a bit further. She's a bit of a surprise, I think, to be fair. There had been a bookmakers out this week that put Frances Black, the senator, I think, at the best odds, followed by Mairead McGuinness. But the speculation is really increasing now, because we're in February and the election is going to take place in October. Will Fianna Fáil run somebody? They haven't run. They've sat out the last few elections. What is Sinn Féin going to do? The Green, Labour has approached the Greens, of course, to talk about an agreed sort of, and the Social Democrats to talk about an agreed candidate. That could be interesting, because you sort of think left voters have gone somewhat to the left in recent years. Could they maybe succeed if there was an agreed candidate there? But there's a lot to play for. And as we know, and we say this every time, but presidential elections are very bruising for the individual as well.
So you could have possibly an agreed government candidate, and an agreed left candidate would make it an interesting race, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure that Fianna Fáil would, you know, stand behind Mairead McGuinness. They might just say,
Heather Humphreys,
we leave it open, maybe. And Frances Fitzgerald, another person who... whose name is being associated with the presidential election. So it could be
Bertie Ahern hasn't ruled it out.
I mean, plenty in Fine Gael say we're absolutely brutal at presidential elections, and maybe we ourselves should have a good hard think about it before we spend loads of lolly on it. But it seems likely that Fine Gael is going to go that way. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, they have the capacity to nominate themselves. So then the question is, do the Greens, Labour and Sock Dems come together? And then there's also the local authority route. So is a wild card going to come not from Leinster House, but by travelling around the country like a wave, washing into the capital and bringing them into the Oros?
Well, looking at Peter Casey and...
Sean Gallagher in 2011
Gallagher,
did
very
well.
Yeah. So there's some Fintan O'Toole, of course, has said he would think about it.
Says he wants to be approached by a party. He's not going to do it on his own. So not sure which party that he's castigated for several years would be approaching him. But
what about you, Anya? What would you think? Upton Park,
joke.
7 years.
No. One of our dogs is a vicious Jack Russell who'd bite everybody. So no, that would not be very, very diplomatic. Yeah, again, broad... Yeah, I mean... We've had broadcasters, haven't we, looking at politics increasingly over the past couple of years, and Alison Cumman now making it into the Seanad. Gráinne Shoiga apparently disappointed that she didn't.
Yes, that's right. And we did have that story as well. They came out that she was the victim of a sort of a deep fake pornographic image or video.
Horrendous.
Yeah, absolutely horrendous, condemned by everybody, and it is being investigated by the guards. But it's a reminder of what politicians face these days, female politicians in particular, who seem to get this extra layer of abuse and threats online, that type of thing. And it is particularly nasty. But yes, on the political side of it, she was disappointed, I think, not to get the senatorial nod from Fianna Fáil, but they seem to have decided that she didn't stand a good chance electorally of getting in Galway West, where somebody like Alison Cumming, they see as somebody who came reasonably close in the general election in Louth.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, even though presidential elections are different, I do think that's going to be one of the deciding factors, that it's not just about putting someone forward, it's about if that person's put forward, are they in with a chance of getting elected? And secondly, are they in with a chance of running someone so close that it's still of benefit to any backers or any political parties if they are the candidate.
And for Sinn Féin, you can see the I mean they've had a couple of fairly, you know, unlucky, put it that way, from their point of view, presidential campaigns. So you can see the advantage of an agreed candidate, particularly when, you know, they're trying to, you know, push the line that together we can outmatch the government if we wanted to.
I mean, Leonie Reitha didn't really work last time. I think there was an expectation from many in Leinster House that she was had the capacity to both take the Sinn Féin vote but reach beyond it. And there was an awful lot of hope in the run into that presidential election campaign, but just shows didn't materialise, and others, you know, caught the wind and she didn't. And because it's about, you know, your personality or your character, you know, whichever way you want to look at it, it really is hard to define that. And sometimes if you think of Michael D. Higgins in that debate all the way back in his first term, when all hell was breaking loose in the studio, he was just standing there and wasn't getting involved. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like the last person standing. If you can just avoid the howitzer that's being fired at you, you know, you can do rather well.
And there's been talk, hasn't there, of John Finucane or Michelle O'Neill, that they might run somebody from the North in the presidential, which of course would...
And Conor Murphy, now the leader of the Shannon here.
It would be an opportunity for them to put forward their key policy aim, which is a united Ireland. Yeah. But I think it's interesting to remember on the agreed candidate from the left, Ivana Bacik, the Labour leader, didn't write to Sinn Féin. She didn't include them in that set of letters she set out to other parties. So there's no love lost between those two parties. However, Mary Lou McDonald was asked about it and she said she was open to the idea.
But she, I mean, the thing is, it's because they can nominate themselves, why would they? Why, as in Sinn Féin, why would they need to go in with the Greens? Because they don't need to, and just as you say, they've got their own platform and just use that.
So we all learned a lesson this week. Brega doesn't mean Brega at all, at all, at all, not according to Dineen.
Well, according to two dictionaries cited by the Taoiseach, but then immediately Gail goes out and saying the Donal Gael Gabarla dictionary is the most important one, and that does say...
Well, that was the one we always used.
And what I would say, you can say that again if you want to, but what I would say is that I just don't understand how this one is allowed to run. I mean, we were talking earlier on, beginning this programme, about that black wave in the Atlantic, which is heading towards us. This is like the dead cat, it should be off the road.
Yeah, I think it's unbecoming, actually. In some ways, he is the Taoiseach, he has to uphold the rules of the Dáil, and he has been caught out here, and I think... He probably needs to stop digging.
No, I have not, said Micheál Martin.
Just withdraw the remark.
It's not, I mean, the Taoiseach is making the claim, and he was making it again this week, wasn't he, that Sinn Féin is much more aggressive in opposition this time around.
And they used that language three times against
interrupting,
him, and he cited the examples of when it happened, and no sanction was applied to those people. So I get that point.
But there's more aggression from the Taoiseach back as well.
Yeah. So I just, let's get on with it. You
know? Yeah, I think it is maybe at this point, maybe if Micheál Martin was advising somebody else in this scenario, he would be saying, look, just drop it, just quote unquote apologise, or use whatever language you need to get it off the table. But I think on this particular issue, Micheál Martin is personally annoyed at the fact he is being questioned.
But it's a good end to the programme. The John McGuinness line. Who was being in the Dáil and securing the position of Laoise Cathain Comhairle.
Yes.
What did he have to say as he looked towards Micheál
Martin? So John McGuinness, who, of course, as everyone would know, is a good friend and always backed Micheál Martin
every time.
never even questioned him, was never a stone in his shoe. But he didn't directly refer to Micheál Martin, but he was looking at him in the Dáil yesterday when he was making his pitch to be Laoise Cathain Comhairle. And he was saying, look, you know, maybe in future, to save everybody any trouble, that if you do say something in the heat of the moment, Os Gaeilge, in the Dáil, perhaps also say it in English as well.
Well, on that note, Tógabogé, we leave it there. Goodbye.